This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Dahlia Feldheim. Hello and welcome, Dahlia. It's such an honor to meet you.
Thank you so much. It's lovely being here, Nikki.
Oh, lovely to be here with you. Now, Dahlia is an organizational psychologist, an author, a speaker on mental wellness and on happiness, and empowers and coaches leadership. So, wow, you do it all, Dahlia, and you're over in Israel, and you were in Singapore, but you live in Israel now, don't you?
So I've been 24 years outside of Israel. My parents are actually British. My mom's Irish. My dad's from Greenwich. I always say that I was made in England, born in Israel, because literally my mom moved over pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And then I moved to Geneva with Procter & Gamble back in 98. And I've been around the world for the last 24 years and just came back a few months ago.
Wow, you're living the dream, because you lived in Singapore as well, didn't you?
Yeah, so it was Geneva, Moscow and Singapore. Most of it was with Procter & Gamble for 17 years and then another company in Singapore.
Well, you've done it all. You're living the dream. And that's why you're inspiring, you know, to all the women and men. Actually, we have men listening too about your life. And we're going to come on and talk about that. So we're all seeking happiness and meaning, particularly in this post-pandemic world. We're all pretty much suffering from post-traumatic stress, aren't we? And questioning our mortality and where are we going? How do we find happiness? And you've got some incredible highbrow credentials, including a master's from INSEAD and certified as a teacher in the science of happiness at the Happiness Studies Academy in collaboration with Miami University. So can you give us some secret tips on happiness? Because we're all looking for it.
Well, first of all, we're all in it together, right? So, you know, and they say it's same in Chinese, right? Every crisis is, you know, danger, but there's another meaning, which is opportunity for growth. It's actually also true in Hebrew. The word for crisis is mashber, which is actually the last stage before birth. So we're all in it together. We're all in this last stage, and we can decide if it's a crisis or if it's a, you know, just before birth. So I think the key for me, and one thing that kind of, when I went through my little trauma that drove me to write the book, everyone knows post-traumatic stress, right? And I could say on myself that I had post-traumatic stress and, you know, coming out of that experience. But luckily, I kind of discovered, or, you know, decided to go deeper into the world of positive psychology. And I came across the term called post-traumatic growth, which is actually three times more likely to happen than post-traumatic stress disorder. And post-traumatic growth is really about when, you know, resilience is when you bounce back, right, to the same level you were before. Post-traumatic growth is when you're able to kind of learn from your pain and, you know, struggles to actually come out much stronger. So I think, you know, my book follows a lot of my personal learnings, including the COVID, but not only the COVID, on what it takes to be happier in general, but especially I focus on the corporate world, because I can say 17 years in P&G, I was in a state of flow. And that's why I decided to call my company Flow Leadership. Flow is Mikai Chik Mikai, coined the term, basically to mean almost meditation in action. When you're so in love with what you're doing, you lose track of time.
Wow.
I've seen it is possible.
I love the way you think, and the fact that you say, we're in the final chapter, really, even though we're coming out of the post-pandemic. It is the final chapter. And I love the way you say we can not only bounce back and be more resilient, but go beyond that. We can all learn from it and be better and happier. And that's brilliant. And we will come on and talk about your lovely book in a minute. But, you know, you are a scientist as well in terms of some of the science elements to the secret of happiness, because it's not external, is it? And I've watched your amazing TED Talk. A lot of people think it's external validation and they want the bigger this and the better this and the and all the trappings. But some of the richest, wealthiest people in the world are the most unhappiest, aren't they? So it's all internal. It's how we love ourselves, how we nurture ourselves, is it, in terms of scientifically?
Another big thing, I mean, I call the, if you're looking into the model in general and the science behind it, first of all, it's an insider job, okay, happiness. Second, it's really a holistic dimension. You can't be, you know, chasing the sun is wrong, but basically you can spread out the kind of what makes the rays of the light. And those are the things you need to kind of be chasing. Things like meaning, okay? Things like physical wellness, things like emotional wellness, relationship. Probably relationship is the number one, you know, most important. So if the listeners only want to remember what's, Talia, tell me the number one secret to happiness, it's actually, you know, the founder of positive psychology. Basically, they did research in Harvard to understand what's the number one driver of happiness. And they really found that's the quality of our relationship.
So relationship with ourselves or relationships with our family or our loved ones?
Both, right? We can't say, you can't say I love you if you can't say I, right? So relationship with self is the first thing, you know, all our negative self-talk. And, you know, it's often easier said than done. But the one thing that I really recommend kind of when we start getting into that kind of emotional trap, I call it step behind the waterfall. In Singapore, if you ever visit, there's actually a place that became my favorite place. It's a waterfall and a cave behind it. So you can literally go into the cave and see the waterfall. And I use the analogy often with my students, because basically when we're in an emotional trap, it's as if we're in the waterfall. Water is falling on our head, okay? So I am angry, okay? I have all these emotions. I'm inundated. The number one, you know, the grandmas used to say count to 10, which is basically getting perspective, which is just stepping back for a moment to say, you know, to stand behind the waterfall. It's not ignoring the emotions, right? We all have negative emotions. Only psychopath or dead people don't. So if you're sad, it's great news. You're not a psychopath and you're not dead, but you do need some reflection time. And reflection time is literally stepping behind that waterfall. And instead of saying, I am angry, saying, I have anger. Why do I have anger? What triggered me? So there's a whole kind of process I kind of recommend in the book of centering our emotions so that we can, you know, act on them versus just react. And that's kind of, you know, probably one of the number one elements of kind of what I talk about, kind of happiness at work. So it is an insider job and it is holistic.
I love that inside job, that it's an inside job. And you know, I love your analogies of that beautiful waterfall that we're standing behind, but it's overwhelm, isn't it, that we're all being literally showered, as you say, with issues and problems and dramas from the world and from ourselves and from our situation and environment. And it is, as you say, it's stepping back from that and just taking a moment.
It's not just emotionally taking a moment, but it's also physically. One of our biggest issues is the, you know, the digital overwhelm, right? And it's proven that, you know, we need time to detox. We need time to shut down, go look at the ocean if we're close, or go nature. It's actually even proven just looking at a picture of nature improves well-being. Being in nature significantly improves. So when, you know, when I'm overwhelmed, I just say, okay, I just need a moment, even if it's 5 minutes to go outside, to take deep breath, you know.
It does help, doesn't it? I think we all learned that in lockdown because we were trapped, literally. And nature does help. It's that mindfulness, isn't it? You know, including myself, I think I'll go for a swim or I'll go for a walk, or it's just that decompress, as you say, isn't it? It's that, okay, I'll feel better. And you, physiologic, or a little dance in the kitchen I do when the kettle's on, and and it does change while you're doing the washing up. It's quite funny, as long as no one can see you.
Yeah, being silly, right? I love it, kind of, and that's why you know, it's really about going back to our original state. Sometimes we're getting too wrapped up in our mind. Actually, even from a science perspective, Boston Group Consulting did research where they forced employees to take one afternoon of digital detox and go outdoors. That's all the action they gave
them. That's brilliant.
And they saw productivity go up 74%.
Did they really? Isn't that interesting? Gosh. And that creativity and innovation improves, doesn't it? Gosh. So you've worked on happiness as a managerial skill. You've even got an app of your own, haven't you? And as you say, after 21 years in the corporate world, you led some of the most iconic culture-changing campaigns. And we'll give the P&G a shout out and hope they retweet us. You were involved with that incredible Always Like a Girl, and you're reclaiming that phase. Because it is still, I know the needle has changed and you've talked a lot about that online, but that being a girl is almost still an insult, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, for those who don't know the campaign, I mean, it became one of the most iconic. I think Forbes ranked it the 10 most iconic campaigns of the decade. And I can tell you, as one of the marketing directors, you know, involved in it, of course, I'm very passionate about the business results, but I say that also in the TED. My youngest daughter called me from school one day. Mom, you won't believe it. They're showing your ad in social studies, right? It became more like commercial, but really iconic. And in the ad, we asked a young girl what it means to run like a girl. And she said, what do you mean? It means run as fast as you can, right? And really, somehow, when we ask, you know, teenagers, both girls and boys, suddenly it becomes an insult. And we still see it today. And I get thousands of calls, you know, from different people. Oh, my son went to football and one of the men, one of the teammates said, you run like a girl. In this case, the coach brought them all together, gave them a whole lecture about it. So the needle is moving, but it's still kind of seen as an insult.
It's not moving quickly enough. I was coming back on the train from London the other week, and this really young child, probably about 3, was crying and upset. And the mother had lost her patience, and she actually said, stop crying like a girl. And I nearly called her out on that. I just thought, no, don't stereotype and condition that, because I love what they do in places like Iceland, don't they? They get, in primary school, young girls to jump off chairs and say they're brave, and boys to sit and talk about their emotions. And even my children's school, they used to get girls to sit in a room separately and talk through problems if they arose, and they'd give boys extra maths. And that's just so wrong, isn't it?
There is elements that we're socialized to, you know, slightly differently. And that kind of manifests itself as we grow older and we start kind of challenge. We do see imposter syndrome, for example, is more common among women versus men. Men still have it, about 50%. And one of the first elements of, you know, leading like a girl, leading from our heart, is strength-based leadership. I mean, strengthen us. Everyone has weaknesses and opportunity areas. We really know to identify each person, what they're good at, and making sure we place them in the right places for them.
For the environment. Because we do, I call it mean girling. Our voices in our head, they mean girl us, don't they? And they say, you're not this, you're not that. But actually, I think everyone's a little bit insecure or a little bit less confident than they appear, don't they? And it's just comparison, I always say, is the route to unhappiness, isn't it?
It's only compared to yourself. Oh, it's only about how you're growing. So I mentioned, you know, I use a model. I call it the 5P model, right? For happiness, which is purpose, you know, perspective, which is basically going behind the waterfall. It's around power up, which is all around the physical key. Because sometimes when we're so stressed, we're not sleeping properly, we're not eating properly, you know, we forget kind of, you know, exercising. And those are so, so, so important, not only physically, but mentally, emotionally, etc. So how do we make sure that we don't run ourselves down? I mean, yeah, sitting is the new smoking, and, you know, stress can be good for us when we know to recover, when we take that time, you know. So stress kind of drives adrenaline and focus. And so I like to also say, I mean, it is good for us. It's proven that it's good for us. It puts you in hyper focus, as long as you know to take the break after. And the fourth one is people that I mentioned before. Yeah. And the fifth one is positivity, which is all around something that I call emotional bravery.
Love that.
Which is really accepting all emotions as part of parcel.
Yes, I think actually, and you know, myself included, when things came up, you sort of shut them down and think, oh, you know, you don't want to feel all. But actually now recognizing, oh, that's a feeling. Why is that? And sitting with it, isn't it? It's almost sort of meditating, isn't it?
And also, you know, it helps you understand, you know, you name it, first of all. What am I feeling, right? That's kind of one of the first strategies, because our emotions, our amygdala, like a seesaw. I mean, when our emotions are aroused, then our frontal cortex, which is all our logic, is depressed. Naming forces us to use language, so it actually balances back. When a kid is crying, the first thing is, oh, I see that you're frustrated. So you gave words. Oh, that's what I'm feeling. I'm frustrated.
Well, there's a brilliant book, Brené Brown's, one of her new books, Atlas of the Heart. It's got about 140 emotions. And I think our teenagers, and certainly mine, are better at that because they have all these emojis and descriptions and faces and ways to describe what they're feeling, don't they? Whereas we only have about 3, you know, it's We need to all get better at that, expressing in words.
Because I'm a fixer. In this sense, I'm, you know, I feel something, I want to kind of go into fixing it. And sometimes it's really important to let it simmer for a while. You know, the only way out is through. But just for enough time, where not to turn it into depression, right? But just to really understand, okay, this is what I'm feeling. It's okay. Today I'm having a slow day. I'm going to do whatever makes me feel good, a nice bubble bath or whatever, so that we can come up. And it is really interesting. I mean, that's the notion of empathy, really sitting with emotions, sitting with others' emotions, you know, without trying to solve it for them.
And your own, that's true. That's true.
I think that's really an important element. And I'll give you a funny anecdote. They actually did PET scans of women versus men, you know, in an environment that required empathy. And they saw that both have a similar level of empathy. Okay. The difference is that women sit with empathy a little bit longer. And in this research, they found that the men, immediately another area in their brain lit up, which is the area of fixing, of problem solving.
So we're going to come on and talk about your exciting new book. Congratulations. It's just come out this month, hasn't it? And I can see it behind you. Dare to Lead Like a Girl, How to Survive and Thrive in the Corporate Jungle. So tell us about it.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, I always say kind of it's the good and the bad. So I spent 17 years with Procter & Gamble. And, you know, I share in the TED, maybe I'll start with that one story that really kind of drove me to write the book. So, you know, I started with Procter & Gamble, 98. 6 months into the job, I was invited into my general manager's office because, you know, something went wrong. And I got so emotional because I'm so frustrated. And when I get frustrated, I tear up really easily. And he smiled and he gave me a box of tissues. And then he said something I'll forever remember. He said, Daya, don't you ever be embarrassed for crying in the office again. It's a sign of your passion. And Dahlia, passion is your superpower. And I remember, I was like, whoa, passion is my superpower. And for the next 17 years in P&G, really, I had incredible leaders, each one, you know, believing me and pushing me and, you know, supporting. And it was a great company for women and creativity. And I was living my purpose. At the end of that 17 years, you know, where basically we moved to Singapore, my husband opened a high tech, P&G wanted me back in Geneva. I left P&G as friends, you know, and decided to take another role that seemed like a dream role, okay, in charge of 100 marketers across Asia. But 2 months into the role, I got a new boss. And, you know, the story, the dynamic is that one day I was invited into his room and he started giving me feedback. Now, I love feedback, right? We used to call it tough love, but that day it was like only tough, denigrating, humiliating. And I'm holding it in now. I'm a C-suite woman, right? And he continues and then he starts humiliating my team. And that's where I got so angry because I knew how hard they worked. And I got so frustrated that I teared up. And he looked at me and he smiled and he gave, you know, gave me a box of tissues. And for a moment I had that warm, fuzzy feeling, right? But then I noticed something weird. And he turned around the tissue box. And on the other side was a handmade sticker he prepared in advance, which read Dahlia's tissue box. He knew, he waited, right? He knew he would make me cry. He waited for it and he thought it was very funny. And I told him, are you kidding me? This is an HR assault. And he's like, oh, stop being so emotional. It's just boy banter. I know you have a sense of humor. And I can tell you that dichotomy, you know, I stayed there. I stayed there for 3 years because I'm a feisty little one, okay? I'm not kind of, why would I quit, right? I enjoyed what I was doing. So I kept on trying to change him, trying to change myself. And I learned, you know, you can't change someone that doesn't want to change. And I learned to the importance of leading like myself. And when I left, I said to myself, oh my God, what a waste of human potential. One company, I was a rock star, right? And I delivered 200%. This other company, you know, the global CEO and CMO thought I delivered, but I knew I gave 10% of my ability because I was constantly, you know, defending myself, right? And so I decided to go and study it. And I did my master's in organizational psychology to really understand what worked so amazingly well in this experience, right? And what didn't in the second experience. And how can we encourage more companies to operate like my experience in P&G? And I can tell you, you know, the reason I decided to write the book is that I realized that what happened to me was way too prevalent in the business world today. And, you know, this book is needed today more than ever. I wrote it before the pandemic. Even then, we were in the midst of a major mental health crisis. 85% were disengaged at work. 1 in 4 experience acute work-related anxiety. This is insane, right? Mm. You know, come COVID, all of it accentuates. We actually have a great resignation or the silent resignation, which for me is even worse, where you stay in there, you're still spending a third of your life, but you're not putting your heart into what you're doing.
Yes.
So, you know, for me, that's kind of really worse. And we saw the number one driver of this dynamic is toxic environments. So that really drove me to kind of work with individuals, because you can improve your situation and build resilience and find, you know, your purpose at work and find happiness from within. But it's also for HR managers, because I say, when there's a really toxic environment, there's only one strategy, which is zero tolerance. And I guess that's what I learned. I was too much in the humor or in the coaching instead of really being, sorry, you won't talk to me like this. I'm going to come back when you're ready to talk to me with respect. So that's kind of the background to the book. And the book is really, you know, despite the name, it's not for women only. It's for men as well as women to connect to this more feminine leadership traits, because we all have both masculine and feminine. And the book is based on a fascinating research where they were trying to understand why there's not more women in the leadership roles, or they're not as effective. And they found that not only are they as effective, they actually lead better than men in 17 out of 19 leadership traits, like creativity, teamwork. And the world has changed. Okay, the times of command and control, especially as teams work remotely. You know, today, if you're not leading with your heart, you're not leading, right? You're managing, and you can't manage in today's environment. So I felt compelled.
And it's so timely, as you say, but I'm so sorry you went through that. And I think a lot of people can relate to having had somebody in their life, in their work or personally, that hasn't respected them or has been almost like a sort of narcissistic bully, the way you'd had, in terms of not recognizing what an amazing job you were doing leading 100 people, which is a huge accolade. And then to only find the faults and to find it funny is really quite sinister, isn't it? And quite alarming that there are people out there. But I think there are people who don't value their staff who think that everyone should think the same as they do as part of their business. And as you say, it's that inclusive, it's leading with people. And you've got a lot of experience about that. And as you say with your book, Dare to Lead Like a Girl, it's about purpose and joy at work, because people did spend so much of their time at work. Now it's at home. Maybe they're a bit more grateful they've got that hybrid working. But the skills of empathy, intuition, passion and resilience. And boy, did you show them with your resilience. You bounced back. You stood behind that waterfall and you came zooming out and have bought this book. And I hope you give a little shout out to thank you for teaching me.
Someone asked me once, what happens if you meet them? You know, and I don't wish it on anyone. I don't wish it on my daughter. You know, people ask me. But there is an element, and this is true for everyone listening. I mean, we all experience pain in some way or form. And I think what I want to encourage the listeners to think about is, you know, what is this pain telling us? Okay, what is the lesson? And what can we do to pass this lesson on, right? Because I think that's the secret to living is giving. And it could be your advice, your smile. But really, there's when you look at post-traumatic growth, you know, it's seeing new opportunities. It's, you know, seeing holistically, you know, situation, finding purpose, and then giving. My mission today is to make sure, and I can tell you there's nothing that makes me happier than, you know, after the TED Talk, I got thousands of women that decided to stand up for something in their life, really? You know, whether at work or personal or just even not asking for what they want. I talk about it a lot, right? And men that realize that, you know, I had a guy call me and he said, you know, the next day after seeing your TED, someone cried in the office. And usually I'm so embarrassed, but now I had an answer. I said, wow, I see you're so passionate about it. How can I help?
Isn't that brilliant? That made such a difference. Wow, you're going to make all of our listeners cry. And you're giving women hope and men hope, actually. You know, men, in order to change the way they as you say, that they cope with somebody feeling emotion in front of them. And women hope that they can stand up to people. But your book goes to support women causes around the world, doesn't it? Is that charities?
Yes. So, you know, it's a funny story, actually. I always said I wanted to open, you know, Lead Like a Girl schools for the underprivileged.
Wow.
I wanted to start in India because that's the market I'm in love with. I was just so impressed by the determination. You know, we see it across the world, but India was one of the markets that I started working for first on. And just as the TED came out, this lady from India called me and she said, we're doing this, you know, scholarship program and we would love you to open the program. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. She said, and we're having women from Africa. And I'm like, okay, I'm doubling. And she said, and guess what we call the program? And this was 2 years before the TED and the book came out. She said, we called it Lead Like a Girl. So it was almost the cosmic landed into my lap. And since then, so I work with them. I work with a cause in Africa. We actually have going to have a Lead Like a Girl island retreats in Greece that will help women with leadership skills, and the income of that will help support other women.
What a brilliant idea. What, that's in the future. Oh, gosh, definitely tell me about that. I'd love to be involved and help you with that. I think that's such an important thing, particularly in this post-pandemic world of people wanting to change work for something they're happier about, change their lives, you know, find happiness now instead of putting everything on hold. I think that's a brilliant idea. Oh, I love it. So the culture is slowly improving. And as you say, the imposter syndrome, confidence issue, we're all trying to improve in ourselves. And you talk about the important female skills of passion and authenticity can help feminine leadership. So that would be brilliant on a retreat. So the science of leadership and development is actually a thing. And you lead with Neuro Leadership Institute, is that right? That you work with executive clients across the globe to train individuals and companies how to lead?
So for me, it's really about taking everything that I've learned, okay, the, you know, the science of happiness, the experience in the trenches. And today I work with companies, I mean, the big Microsoft, Google, Facebook, on leadership development program. We call it the Aspiring Leader, because too many companies don't realize that as you evolve from manager to leader, there's a totally different leadership skill set you need. So I work with them on a whole kind of program, taking them through that 5P journey, helping them find their purpose, because we all have our purpose. And it's driven usually by our heritage, sometimes by our pain points. And I help kind of employees find that. But then, you know, I had CEOs say, oh, they will all leave and, you know, live in the Himalayas, but no, it's actually helping them find a golden link that connects their personal purpose to the company purpose. So that's kind of element there. So I take them through the whole journey. We do play it. You mentioned earlier, we developed a game. The company is called Happiness. So a little startup.
Happiness without the H, isn't it?
Happiness. Yeah, it's happiness.
And I love actually, you know, people, as you say, their work, they've got to be happy in their work because they spend a lot of time there, and they've got to be happy in their home life. And actually, COVID crossed that bridge, didn't it? That suddenly we could have a Zoom call like we're doing now, you know, and be in our slippers or our dressing gown or whatever, and answering the door and just showing people that we're human and actually are, instead of, you know, putting on an act, which is what everyone did before, now it's okay to be ourselves a bit more, isn't it? So it's helped.
Okay, not to be okay.
It's okay to not be okay and to be more natural about what's going on in your life and more honest. You know, not that people were dishonest before, but they would have one persona, wouldn't they, in the workplace, particularly women, I think, felt as though they had to.
And I love what it's doing for men, you know, not only bosses, but also husbands.
Yes.
Realize, oh my God, my wife is such a multitasker.
Exactly. It just was an eye opener, wasn't it? In your TED talk, you also mentioned that you speak on mental wellness and bullying at work and post-traumatic growth. So you have so many skills yourself, and you're starting a movement to humanize the workplace, really, and get away from those bosses that bring us all down.
Not only against the negative, it's also focusing on the positive. So, you know, 17 years in PNG, really, I was on fire. And I was on fire because, you know, I knew my strengths. My bosses knew my strengths. I was encouraged to work on my strengths. You know, I had a passion project every time. I knew I loved training. I became a training junkie within the organization. So, you know, I think a really big element there, you know, the negative story was more that what drove me to write the book. But the book is all about how can we use positive psychology in our life as leaders to be better for our people, with our people, with our managers. So I think, you know, that's just a really...
Definitely keep that positive side. Because I think, and certainly in my own career, when I was given the freedom by bosses who trusted you, you know, to go and find an idea or start a project or, you know, go and start a team in abroad or do something, it really does make you buzz, doesn't it, in terms of thinking you go outside your own comfort zone and make things happen. And
rise to your highest expectations or sink to your lowest. So that's
oh yes, interesting. I love the way you think. So it's really about having the space, isn't it, to bring your passions, as you say, and your ideas to reality, to thrive at work and at home, and to be creative and innovative and strategic as you are, and taking our best selves to the workplace. I've read that you say it's the right culture that enables each person to bring their best self to work, and that is proven to be the number one driver of high performing teams, which you got from Google Aristotle Research. So that's encouraging. And talking of encouraging, your mind and body, I mean, you're not only this incredible science, and we'll come on to talk about your military background, and you've got the science and the happiness and bring everything together, but you encourage the mind and body to work together with mindfulness and your own yoga and mindfulness. You do for yourself and for others, is that right?
I did a yoga. I'm actually hyperactive, so I decided to do a yoga trainer's course, and I teach and I do every day, and that really helps me. And I have a little om that kind of reminds me to be on.
Oh, is that an om that you're wearing? Oh, wow. I want one of those as well. I need an om and to come on your retreat. Amazing. So you don't just do it for yourself, the yoga and mindfulness. You encourage other people to do it, or you teach other people to do it?
No, I teach other people.
You teach as well?
A workplace, but I also have a course.
Do you ever sleep? Of course you sleep, because that's one of your P's of finding the time to sleep.
You know, sleep is as important as anything else. I try to get my 7-8 hours.
Wow. Well, you look incredibly glowy. I mean, people can't see you on here. We need to work off a photo of you online. But your background is well grounded in science, but you keep everything in flow. You obviously do that yourself, and looking within, and that yoga and mindfulness. I think that's amazing. So you bring all these tools together so that mind, body, yoga, mindfulness, leadership and neurosciences together. And so are your incredible other skills that we haven't touched on yet. You have an incredible and possibly surprising military background, as well as everything else you do, don't you? You completed army service as a platoon commander, which, as you say, is a course in leadership in itself. I mean, gosh, how was that?
Well, first of all, I don't talk about that too often, so I don't get this question that often, but I am from Israel, and in Israel army is compulsory, and for me, I have a belief, if you already do something, you know, give it your full Monty. So I was a platoon commander of girls, basic training, and I guess, you know, being in charge of 250 girls was my crash course in leadership. I'll tell you just one little anecdote where, you know, someone asked me recently, and, you know, I had one soldier that basically my commander, she misbehaved. And I said, well, give me just one chance. And I was actually not a platoon commander at the time. I was a sergeant. So, you know, responsible for drills. So I took her out for drills midnight. And yes, I drilled her, but I also gave her a whole psychology lecture without kind of knowing it, you know, hey, because Israel is a melting pot. Everyone can, you know, bring their best self. And so I basically talked about, you know, what a missed opportunity if she doesn't kind of, you know, forget the background, but bring her best self. And it was just a really heart-to-heart discussion while being really tough. And, you know, this is something that I learned, that you can be really caring and really demanding at the same time. And, you know, towards 2 a.m., she was a really tough cookie. She broke down into tears. We bonded while still keeping the distance. And I'll tell you, the next morning when I went to the cafeteria, usually it's just your unit that needs to salute you. She got everyone to stand up and salute. And I realized, and she turned to be the best soldier ever. She was so determined and so committed. And I guess for me, you know, everything I learned about people leadership started there, you know, how to motivate people, how to encourage them to be the best, how to be, you know, demanding and tough, but caring at the same time. And so, yeah, I do find that, you know, I bring my military service kind of experience into the leadership world. It's a character building.
Amazing. And that caring side that you obviously made her recognize something in herself that she wanted to prove back, that she, you know, to believe in herself and her self-esteem and confidence, and good for you. How amazing. And as you say, that was a course in leadership itself about initiative, taking risks, seizing opportunities. I mean, all of that that you carry with you in everything that you do, as well as the holistic side, don't you?
I think we all have incredible stories.
Yes.
We just don't realize how they've built who we are today. And I encourage, you know, once a storyteller, always a storyteller. So I encourage people to think about their stories in their life, their hardship, their moments of, you know, being in flow, to really distill what is it within them? What is their personal gift to the world? Because, you know, reality is we are all gifted. We are all special. And it's about being able to distill it and kind of bring it. And that's kind of the magic that leaders can do with their team. And that's kind of what makes me kind of passionate.
You are passionate and unique, and you can see that. You know, I can see that with you on the screen and others can't at home. But in terms of that gift and that love you have, particularly for groups of people, you know, you've looked after 100 people in a workforce, or 200 within an army, you know. And that's a huge number of people with all different emotions and dramas and personal stories. And yet you've managed to lead and feel something to help them individually. And that is a gift in itself, isn't it? Amazing. And I think probably myself included, everyone listening to you now thinks, oh, well, you know, Dahlia has literally done everything. And actually the fact that you've been in the military, they probably feel, you know, lacking or less than themselves in terms of what you've done.
I think sometimes I was, you know, and that's why it's really important for me to state this. We all have our stories. We all have our experiences. And yeah, there is something, you know, in learning and following, you know, understanding other people's journey, but, you know, you can't never judge another person because you never know what they've been through. And really recognizing people for what they bring, because we all have, you know, this gift to bring to the world. So that's kind of where Lead Like a Girl is not really about men versus women. It's really about leading from the heart, leading from strengths, leading from people, you know, power with people versus power over people. And that's kind of the essence of it.
Yes, I love that. And actually people listening, you know, whatever their job or their, you know, life story or their relationship or whatever is going right or wrong in their life, you know, to again not compare the way looking at, you know, Dahlia has got this incredible career and this incredible skills and experience, and to look at them personally about they have, but just in a different way, as you say. And, you know, and even a gift as a mother, you know, it gives you multi-talented tasks, doesn't it, in terms of the things you have to face on a daily basis.
In general, I always say you want work-life balance, have kids.
That's so true, because you're sort of, you know, a psychologist, a doctor, a sort of tutor, an educator, you know, all of these things. And people that aren't parents, you know, they're all doing that within themselves or with it to other people to help them, aren't they?
We all have journeys to go through, and all our journeys are unique. So, you know, that's why it's really important when you're seeing a person, maybe he's flaring out at you and it has nothing to do with you at all.
No, it makes you think differently. That's why I love the way you think. So, with your background, as you know, we've touched on, but you studied psychology and business. You went straight to the top of Procter and Gamble. You were really instrumental with that Always Like a Girl campaign, won 14 Cannes Awards, achieved 70 million views, and appeared on the Super Bowl. So you must have been super proud, you know, to have been championing that
I
campaign.
don't take credit for that campaign. You know, I was one of the marketing directors leading the brief. I really kind of give the agency the credit. You know how it is with the advertising development. But yes, I'm immensely proud, you know, not of the business results as much as the impact it's having, you know, still today and kind of changing mindsets. And I'm really proud, you know, of P&G enabling, you know, we all have kind of using the brand voice to make an impact. You know, I did work also in India, and that's so I think we all have a way of bringing what's important for us personally into what we're doing. And I'm proud that I was able, and I'm grateful that I was enabled to bring my personal purpose for people empowerment into what I was doing every day.
And still are, how amazing. And it's, you know, lasting as a story in your own life. So, do you ever have your own fears of being not good enough, imposter syndrome yourself?
Oh, I'm full of fears. Yes, I mean it's a imposter syndrome. Yes, I mean when I in the last 3 years when my boss was so negative, I started thinking, you know, maybe I'm not as good, you know, as 17 years. And you know, it's insane, right? You couldn't be lucky for 17 years. I had fear of failure. I used to be quite a perfectionist. I used to be a gymnast, so that was kind of, you know, always being, it wasn't being competitive versus others as much as being the best that you can be. That was kind of, you know, being perfect. I had to learn that, you know, we learn from our failures as much, if not more, than from our successes. A recent fear, I'm going to share it very openly here, is I actually realized that I have a fear of failure, but I also have a fear of success, and especially linked with jealousy. And this book itself has been very therapeutic in putting myself out there, because who am I? I remember when I gave the first talk, my friend and later on my business partner, Tal Ben Shachar, he's Harvard's guru for positive psychology. He was in the audience. And, you know, at the end of the talk, it was just when I, you know, came out of the corporate experience and all my emotions were raw and it was very impactful. And he came to me and he said, "Daniel, you need to speak on TED and you need to write a book." And I remember literally going, "Me?" And we're all any girl, any boy next door, but we all have our stories. And for me, it was you know, it was quite a journey to put these stories out there. But as I said earlier, I think what drives me if these stories of if my experience will help one person, you know, stand up to bullying, you know, boss, you know, change how they're going to do. And I'll just finish with an anecdote that really kind of made me realize, wow, we are doing something kind of meaningful here. Was, you know, I told you about the calls that I got, but the craziest call I had was from a guy that actually told me, "I listened to your TED talk. I realized I'm a bully. What do I do?"
Really?
So sometimes, you know, so about increasing awareness of all of these things that drive, you know, performance. And I try and do it because the data is all out there. I collect it. It's not that, you know, it's not new research. It's a lot of collection. The data is out there, but it's really synthesizing, you know, storytelling. So it's relevant for you. Data, because I had people tell me, you know, I had actually that only that boss that told me I'm too positive. And I literally had to go back to the data and see
Really?
being positive is good for business.
Yes, people tell me I'm too positive sometimes. You know, that was hard in lockdown because I'm a really positive optimist and have always tried to find the silver lining in everything. But in COVID, I really struggled to find one and I kept, and that really worked strangely in my own head in terms of, okay, I'm normally an optimist. What do I do here? And I had to break it right down to finding the daily gratitude. Because, which I never normally used to do. So it's interesting, it's made us change our own personality even in lockdown, hasn't it? Amazing. But thank you for sharing that in terms of your own fears, because people will look at you and think, oh, she doesn't have any fears. What about my? But actually, everyone does. And I think it's brilliant people are calling you and saying, how do I change? And what you're doing to champion women. So, which strong women have influenced you in your life?
Oh, wow. Well, my mom, a very good combination of kind of high standards, but care. I still today, you know, remember her embrace whenever I was sad or crying or, you know, just being with me, but also kind of driving me and helping me or enabling me. She always used to say the drive was within me. She just enabled it. I had a lot of amazing kind of women leaders. I had as many men leaders as women leaders, amazing men and women. But yeah, I'm constantly, you know, inspired. The women out there today, I mean, Jacinda Ardern is one of them, right? We're now having in the UK.
Oh, I know we've got a new female prime minister. In fact, in lockdown, a lot of the female prime ministers around the world, you know, were quite highly regarded in terms of how they reacted with empathy and with compassion with the community and how they actually... you know, changed the thinking.
The book was written before COVID, but COVID showed us, you know, 7 out of the 9 most successful countries were led by women because they had a different approach. Yes. They didn't believe that they know it all. You know, they asked for directions from experts. They went on the, you know, empathy, talking directly to the children, you know, fast decision making. So there's a lot of elements there that, you know, we suppress in the business world, you know, thinking empathy is weak, soft skills are weak, but this is actually what is needed in the business world today. Definitely. More than ever.
And your timing is perfect. So do you have a mantra for living your life then?
Nice one. I always say, have an idea of where you're headed, meaning setting goals, etc. But don't forget to enjoy the view on the way. So I'm a work hard, play hard type of person. So meaning, you know, goals are important. And I am an achievement oriented and I write down goals every year, etc. But I also learned that it's not achieving goals that makes me happy, but the progress that I'm making every day. It's the, you know, because otherwise you just reach a summit and you already see the next summit. Okay, so the stops that I make when climbing, taking a moment to say, you know, to share gratitude, to say, you know, and I have a sticker every time I brush my teeth for that minute and a half or whatever, you know, that's my time to think about it. I'm grateful in the last year. So I think that's a really important to stop, smell the roses, remember where you came from and, you know, just be grateful. Because when we appreciate, and this I'm going to kind of share a quote from Tal Ben-Shahar about the double meaning of the word appreciate. When we appreciate the good in our life, the good in our life appreciates, increases in value.
Oh, I like that. Oh, you've got some fabulous quotes and thoughts and all from your training and everything is brilliant and the way you think is lovely. So any hobbies? Do you have any time for any hobbies? What do you get up to?
As I said, work hard, play hard. I wrote about it in the book. I remember even from my first day in PNG, we would go rollerblading in the car park and water skiing and then winter skiing on the weekend. It's so important to have, and I always say, I said, you know, you want a work-life balance, have kids, but it's really just something you book to leave work and go to. So it's a joke kind of have kids, but it's really, I say to all the bachelors, book something, okay? A sport, a fitness, a run with a friend. So I'm actually quite active. I swim in the ocean. I try at least 4 times a week. I dive, I run, I do Pilates, yoga. Actually, I like every single, I dance, I do Nia dancing. So I like to try new things, to connect in new ways. And yeah, a lot of hobbies and reading, of course. And so yeah, both doing things where I just spend time with myself as well as spending time with others.
And that's important too, isn't it? And I think we've all learned that in lockdown, actually, to have that self-care and do something with yourself. And that's okay, you know, not to feel judged by society constructs and everything else, to be by yourself, not have to be in a relationship, you know, to actually sit with yourself or do something on your own that you like doing.
I can say I joke and say I became an introvert during COVID. I just kind of learned to be more reflective and realized that, hey, if I'm not my own best friend, then who? There's a saying, right? If not me for myself, then who will be for me? And if not now, when?
True. The greatest love of all, isn't it, is with ourselves and having our own back. So lastly, what wisdom would you say to influence women or men listening out there?
I decided to call the book Dare to Lead Like a Girl. And the courage is a really important word. There's two elements I'd like to finish off with. I mean, people think that courage is like making decisions that others don't make, but courage actually comes from the French word cœur, which means heart, because the really courageous leaders lead from the heart. So that's kind of one thought that I had. And then the second is that, as we spoke earlier, courage is not the absence of fear. It's really important. We all have fears. The most successful people in the world have fears. They just accept them, move on, connect to their superpowers, and then dare. So that's what I'd like to leave us with.
Oh, I love that. And the fact that, yes, courage is from the heart. I hadn't actually associated that. So that's brilliant. And thank you so much. You've taught from the heart. And that's really, you know, made a difference. And I really appreciate that. Thank you. And our listeners will love that. And, you know, good luck with your book and your tour and everything. It sounds amazing and it's so timely.
I love kind of the continuous cycle of giving, because when we give, we get.
Exactly. And people come into your lives that, you know, and change your own life and things they say. And if this has changed, you know, someone's day or someone's life, then that's why we do this podcast. So thank you so much, Dahlia, for your leadership, your wisdom to help us believe more in our authentic selves. It's been a privilege to chat to you today. Thank you so much. The Influential Women's Podcast is founded and host presented by Nikki Bannerman, and this episode is edited by Georgina Palziard. Please keep listening for more guests and subscribe to hear our back catalogue on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and even ask Alexa to play the Influential Women Podcast.